My name is Robin. I'm the lead pastor here. Welcome to Eastlake. We call ourselves a church for everyone. And we're in a series called Follow. We've been talking about what it is to have a relationship with Jesus. And here's the point. When we follow Jesus, that's when we get to know him. We experience Jesus as we follow him, and that's the point. That's how we get to know him. Now, today we're going to take a look at a story about a man in the Bible. It's a story about this guy that really wants to have a relationship with God, but he doesn't feel worthy, doesn't feel good enough. And he runs into Jesus, and he tries to figure out, how do I find out if I'm good enough? Which is a question that all of us, from time to time, need a place to go discover. Who has the authority? Who can tell me? Who can speak into my life and answer this question? Am I good enough? How do I become worthy? So let's look at the story. It's the big idea this weekend. You can't earn worthiness. He comes to Jesus and he says, I want to be worthy. And so here's this story going on. There's this crowd of people watching it. So we'll just sort of step into the crowd. And here we go. Here we'll read it and we'll make some comments. As Jesus was starting out on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus is Jewish, Jerusalem, Israel, a man came running up to him, knelt down and asked, good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? So a couple thousand years ago, Jesus is in Israel, and this man comes running up, and he says, what do I have to do to be good? And here's what's happening. He hears about all the miracles, and he hears about everything that Jesus says, and he sees all the crowds, and he thinks, you know, this must all be happening. God must be doing all of this for Jesus, because Jesus is good enough. So he comes up to him, and he says, I want to be good enough, too. I want to be worthy. What do I have to do to be good enough? Now, remember, in Jesus' time in Israel, a couple thousand years ago, Israel was about the size of Utah, so it's a little under 3 million people, and everybody in this nation goes to the same church. So there's just one national church in Israel, and in this church, everybody goes to this church, and so like your aunt, your uncle, your cousin, your teacher down the street, the kids you play with, they all go to the same Jewish church. They all go there. And everything that you've learned about God, you learned about in this church. Because there's only one church in all of Israel, and that's the one they all went to. So everything you learned. And in this church, they had a teaching, in this church, the Jewish church, they had a teaching that you had to earn worthiness. They had a whole system of things that you had to do. And if you did those things, you were worthy. And if you didn't do these, you weren't worthy. And, I mean, if you weren't worthy, you couldn't even go to church. And the main thing of the religion for the Jewish people, Jewish religion, you know, is you had to be worthy. And so everybody worked really hard to be worthy. And they had a temple. It was a very important place in Jerusalem, this temple. And if you weren't worthy, you couldn't go to the temple. And so in the Jewish culture, it's a big deal for him because he, you know, you want to be able to go to the temple because you want to be involved in all the different events that go on there. But if you're not worthy, if the Jewish church has not said you're worthy, you're not, I mean, if you're not found worthy, you can't even go to the temple. You can't even go to church. And so here's this guy. He comes up to Jesus. He says, I've been working all my life, working really super hard, been working the system, and I still don't feel good enough. Doesn't matter what anybody says, I don't feel worthy. And Jesus, well, you know, you must be good enough. Can you tell me how to be good enough? Where do you go to get that answered? Especially when you don't feel good enough. Where do you turn? Where do you go? How do you deal with the times in your life you don't feel good enough, you don't feel worthy? So that's where this person is in the story. So he comes to Jesus. Let's keep reading. Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Why do you call me good? Jesus asked. Only God is truly good. So here's what he says, the translation. He says, listen, it's not about your goodness. Worthiness is not about your goodness. It's about God's goodness. You're not going to be able to earn worthiness by being good. In fact, what he's really saying is only God is great enough to cause anybody to feel good enough. We can't do that ourselves. Doesn't matter what the church says, your parents say, your husband, your wife, your kids, nobody's great enough. There was a king in France, Louis XIV, super, super rich, had big palaces and all kinds of money and armies and everything else. And he called himself the Great. King Louis XIV, the Great. Remember the Iron Mask guy in the movie? That's that guy. And so when he died, he left instructions on what his funeral was supposed to be. And on the day that they had the big funeral, they had the big chapel and everything, the lights were to be dimmed down as low as they could get them, and the place is packed out. And here's his casket in the very front. Here's the casket. And on the casket, it's all lined with gold. And on the casket, there's one candle that's been set on the casket, and it's just like illuminating throughout the entire room. One bright candle he had on the casket, because he wanted to make sure that everybody understood the candle was a symbol of his greatness. He left all these instructions, so on the day, there it is, the lights are all dimmed, the place is all packed out, there's the casket up front, and there's this candle, one large candle, the light is just beaming out, and when the pastor comes, that's going to do the eulogy, comes up, he walks over to the casket, and he takes his hand, and he puts the candle out. And he looks up at the crowd and says, "Only God is great." You know, you're going to run into things in your life, I'm going to run into things to my life, that only God is great enough to handle. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. Only God is great enough to make me feel good enough. And so Jesus tells this to this guy. He says, listen, you've got it all backwards. It's not about your goodness. It's about God's goodness. So let's keep reading. So here he goes. He says, only God is truly good. But to answer your question, you know the commandments. And so circle that right there. He knows the commandments. Most of us do. Just follow along now. But he answered the question, you know the commandments. You must not murder. You must not commit adultery. You must not steal. You must not testify falsely. Don't tell lies. And you must not cheat anyone. Honor your father and mother. So imagine for a moment, stick with me, you're in the crowd and you're listening to all this. And Jesus says, listen, let me prove it to you that you'll never be able to be good enough. Let me prove it to you. Let's just recite a couple of rules, some of the religious rules, some of the system that the church has. Let's just rehearse the rules. So we're all in the crowd, and he says, don't murder. And most of us are there going, got that one. I mean, no problem. Never. I'm good. I'm feeling good enough. And then he says, don't commit adultery. And you see a couple of people's heads go down. It's like, whoops, that didn't work so good for me. And then he says, after that, he says, don't steal. And so you're thinking back in your life, and you're thinking, oh, man, don't steal. And then he says, don't tell lies. And at that point, everybody's starting to shuffle their feet and look down. And you know, they're thinking, it's just yesterday I had to tell a lie to get out of a big problem. And then he says this. He says, don't cheat anyone. I'm a competitive person. I started cheating in tetherball in third grade. I mean, like cheating, you know, don't cheat anyone. And then he says this, and think about all the hassles you've been in with your parents and disagreements and all the different things that's gone on with your folks. And then he says, honor your father and mother always. And at that point, your head is down. You're like, I can't do all that stuff. No way. And Jesus says, exactly. You can't. That's the point. You can't make yourself feel good enough. You'll never be able to follow all of the rules. But he grows up in a big church, and in that big church, everybody's always counted on the rules, and if you can somehow follow the rules. And here's the thing with rules. If you can't follow them, you just have one option. You have to fake it like you are. You have to pretend that you're following the rules and hope nobody ever finds out that you're following the rules. And so here's what the man says. Listen, the really interesting thing that he says. Jesus lays all the rules down. Here's what he says. Listen, teacher, the man replied, I've obeyed all these commandments since I was young. Most of us are probably thinking, well, what else are you going to say? You're not going to admit it. Here's what he's actually saying. He's saying, Jesus, I'm exhausted. I have been trying to keep these rules my whole life, and I still don't feel good enough. It's still not working for me. I mean, what am I supposed to do when the rules don't work? What kind of family did you grow up in? Where did you go to church? What was your background like? What kind of rules were there? And then what was it like for you when you were unable to follow the rules? And it's a real problem for people that are religious. If you grew up in church and you were able to be found worthy. So let's say they say you're worthy, right? So just picture this. You're the guy. You're worthy. So you go to all the events and you get to go to the temple and all those things. But when you're there, you know that you're actually not worthy. Because you've kept a lot of secrets from your parents. And you've kept a lot of secrets from the people at church. And even though you may like have their title of worthiness, you know that you're not. What's it like when you go to the temple then? I'm a part of the group that's worthy and we're all here, but in your heart you're like, I'm not worthy. I know I'm not good enough. And it doesn't matter what the church says, because the church loses authority, because anytime I figure out that I can trick the church, then I realize, well, they're not powerful enough or strong enough, or, I mean, why would I listen to them when I can trick them? So then you're really trapped. Because now the one group on the whole earth that you were hoping could make you feel good enough, and you did have to trick them, but if you could, and then you realize it doesn't matter what they say. Nothing's changing for me. I fooled them. And here's where this man is in the story. And so that's why he comes to Jesus. And so a lot of us come to Jesus. We're like, I don't feel good enough. Whatever system you come out of, maybe you come from a place that had all kinds of different rules, had nothing to do with religion, but there was rules, there were the things you were supposed to do, and you couldn't keep them, and there you stand. And so it's an interesting response that Jesus does after he says, I've kept these all my life, and listen what Jesus does. He says, looking at the man, Jesus felt genuine love for him. Now, what Jesus could have done is said, liar! Right, you kept all the rules all your life. Who are you trying to kid? Or he could have scolded him. Or he could have said, listen, I don't think you understand. Let me go over the rules with you one more time. I mean, think of all the different things that Jesus could have said to this man, and here's what he actually did. He looked at him and he loved him because he said, man, you are really trapped. When Jesus sees us in our stuff, his initial reaction is genuine love, no matter what it is. I have stood before him in so many terrible situations in my life, and like, because you grow up with humans, you sort of stand like this with a flinch because you're like, oh, I don't want to hear the response. And then when he loves you, so he genuinely loves him, and then here's what he says to him. He says, there's still one thing you haven't done, he told him. Go and sell all your possessions. Circle that. That probably made the crowd go, whoa. Go and sell all your possessions and give the money to the poor, and you will have treasures in heaven. Then come follow me. So he makes it very, very simple for him, and it's what this whole series is about. He says, I'm not going to make it complicated for you. If you want to feel worthy, come and follow me. Now remember, this person has grown up in a family. This person has grown up in a church that said, you have to be worthy so you can follow God. And Jesus turns the whole thing upside down and says, no, that's not the way it works. Come follow me, and it will make you feel worthy. Come follow me, and here's the point, and you'll feel good enough. And he introduces it with this like discussion about money, which probably the young man, and maybe you already here today, and maybe people in the crowd said, I knew it. I knew you're just like all the rest of them. You're just out to get my money. That this whole thing's a big Jesus show with all the lightning and miracles. It's probably smoke and mirrors. The whole thing, you're just trying to get my money. But if you notice in the story, Jesus doesn't ask for his money. He doesn't say, bring the money to me. He says, give the money to the poor. He's identified something in his life. He's saying, listen, get a completely clean slate, man. There'll be years and years and years for you to make money. Just get a clean slate and come follow me. Make it very, very simple. And as you follow me, you will feel worthy. Give the money to the poor. I wanted to make a comment about generosity. I don't know how it works for you. You know, when you come out of stores and corners, there's a lot of times at the busy places, there'll be someone there with a sign. And I used to never give them any money ever. Because I would see them, I thought, you're right. You're going to go buy whiskey or beer or something like that. Do you think I'm going to fall for that? I ain't giving you any money. And so then I would just keep my money. Now, Clarice and I sit down at the first of the year and we think about all kinds of different things that we want to see happen in our lives and our marriage with our family and pray about things. God, what are you going to do in my life this year? So the Lord challenged me and said, I want you to be more generous to people that are poor. Here's the definition of poor, people that don't have enough. Here's the definition of rich, people that have more than they need. The latest statistics say that in the United States, most people are in the top 1% of wealth in the entire world. If your air conditioner broke down in your car or your house this year, your air conditioner went out, that's a rich person's problem. If you're having trouble like at school, getting your kids into school, getting the teachers, you went, I can't believe these lines, that's a rich person's problem. If your top doesn't match your purse, that's a rich person's problem in the whole world. We're all rich. And so God was like, you're really, really rich. You have more than you need. And so this was the challenge. Give all my change away. Now you have to understand, I loved my change. I used to go to the store and I would take my change and I'd bring it home and I'd put it in a special container and I would watch it grow and I just couldn't wait to go to the little change machine. You know, one little Canadian gets spit out. But the rest of it, you get a little slip. And it always asks me, do you want to donate that? Yeah, right. They probably drink too, you know. And so, but then I would get my little slip at Smith's and when I would go buy my frozen little DiGiorno pizzas, which I shouldn't eat, but I do. And so I'd go buy those, and I'd feel so good because it was like, look at me, man. It's almost like I'm getting it for free. And then the Lord comes and says, give all your change away this year. I said, what? Lord, that's a lot of money. Have you seen that bag, Lord? Give all your change away. So I started to do it. I'd save it up, and I'd have my change. And this is what I do. I have a day, and I say, okay, Lord, today's a day we're going to give the change away. Just show me who to give it to. And he picks one of those people with a sign. I'm like, God, what, did you have a bad day? You're not knowing everything? You know what they're going to do with this money? Give the money to them. And boy, did I ever learn a lesson. When I committed my change, it wasn't my money anymore. It was the poor people's money. It was the poor's money. It wasn't mine. And that person belonged to God, and he knew their story a lot better than mine. Here's what I realized. For years, I had just been using my judgmental opinion as an excuse to keep my money. And it's not even a lot of money. And who am I to think I know the future or the best thing for that person? They're not my child. Hey, let's look at it this way. Play it forward. What if I do give them the money and they do something stupid with it and I'm like, see? But what if at that moment, what if that money ignited a fuse? What if that was the first time they ever hit rock bottom? It was all part of God's plan. He's like, see? You funded them hitting the bottom. They finally cried out to me. How do I know? So I give all the change away. I got a bag on my desk right now. And it's getting ready, and I already know who I'm going to give it to. I got to find her now. She's around this city somewhere because I saw her recently, and the Lord reminded me, that's who I want you to give the money to. And so I just wanted to ask the question, when it comes to generosity, how are you doing with your money? Is it your money? Do you spend all your money on yourself and the people that you know and love? Or is there anything happening in your life that you give to the poor? He comes to him. Now, here's an opportunity for us next week. Once a year, we do this drive. It's called Souls for Souls. We partner with this larger organization that gives shoes to people all over the world. Perfect time. Your kids are going back to school. You got your summer shoes. We all bring shoes here, and then we donate the shoes to this organization. And they can say it a lot better than me, so check this video out right here. It's called Souls for Souls.
We understand you have a choice when giving, but here are some of the unique benefits to donating to Souls for Souls. When you give the simple gift of shoes, you're protecting people from life-threatening disease and illnesses. And in many cases, with the proper shoes, children will meet requirements and will be allowed to attend school. You're helping hundreds of people through our micro-enterprise initiatives. Your unwanted shoes help those in developing nations with a sustainable business, a way to support themselves and their families. In times of disaster locally as well as globally, Souls for Souls can help. Your donated shoes provide support to those recovering. You're recycling. We give your unwanted shoes a second life. And Souls for Souls is 100% sustainable. No shoes we receive are ever thrown away or end up in landfills. Ever.
Do you have a couple pair of shoes you could bring next week for kids and people that don't have shoes? And we'll have some tables out here, and Marcella, one of our children's directors, she organizes the whole thing, and we take them down to. It's a way of being generous towards people that don't have as much as we have. And It's an opportunity to be able to understand that when I have been given a lot, there's room for me to give to someone else. So next week, come. There's a little thing in your program you can look at, Souls for Souls, and bring your souls next week. So Jesus gives him this invitation. He says, come follow me, sell all your possessions, give the money away to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me. Look at the next line. At this, the man's face fell, and he went away sad, for he had many possessions. So here's the big moment. I mean, he's in the crossroads. What's the point, right? And Jesus says, well, the point is follow me. If you want to feel worthy, if you want to feel good enough, follow me. But you're going to have to leave the money behind because that's what you've always counted on before. And the man's face goes down. And can you imagine the inner dialogue that this guy is having? Maybe you're having it right now. Not my new shoes that I just got at Nordstrom's, Lord. No. You know, you might be having the inner dialogue, well, the old ones. And he's probably thinking to himself, give up all my money. can't give up all my money. And then his other voice says, yeah, but you've had your money when you came here, and the money didn't make you feel good enough. This is your chance. You get to be with the miracle guy. He's telling you, come follow. I know, but my money, Mike, I can't just give up all my money. And his head goes down. He probably starts thinking, come on, do it. Just stay, just be with him. Just, this is your big chance. I can't do it, man. That's my money. I rely on my money. And then he starts to walk away. And the Bible says that he was sad. And I don't think he was sad because of the question that Jesus asked. I think he was sad because he knew he was missing his opportunity. When's the last time you had an opportunity and you knew it was your opportunity and you didn't take it because you wanted something else more and it killed you? It was so sad for you to know that. And he walks away and decides not to follow. And we all have something in our life. It's not just money. We all have something in our life. We have that one thing in our life that will cause us to walk away from Jesus. Anytime he brings it up, you're like, whoa, Lord, that's getting a little touchy. Just stay over there in your Lord box. Come on. It doesn't have to be money. It could be anything. And you know the tragedy of the story? The tragedy of the story is not that he couldn't give up his money. So get that out of your head for now. That's not the tragedy of the story. The tragedy of the story is that he had been taught he had to earn everything. And so when he gets into a situation that he is at a time in his life that there's no way he can do what Jesus asks him, it never occurs to him to ask Jesus for help. That's the insidious thing about religion that teaches us we need to earn our worthiness. When we face things in our life that's too big, it never occurs to us to ask for help because we're conditioned we have to earn it. You'll probably face something, because I'm praying for you, you'll probably face something soon, and you can like just know this, and it's going to be that one thing, and you're not going to be able to do it. Jesus is going to come forward. He's going to say, follow me, come follow me, and you're going to start to follow, and then this one thing is going to come up, and you're not going to be able to do it. And you can walk away sad, or you can ask for help. That's the tragedy of. So he didn't have to leave. He could have said, Jesus, I can't do that. He could have just humbled himself and said, Jesus, I can't do that. I want to follow you, but I can't give up my money right now. His problem was his money. His problem was he couldn't humble himself and ask for help, and he'd been taught that. Now listen, whatever you're facing when it comes to follow, when you hit that moment, and it could be so deep, I've always been this way, I've always acted this way, it doesn't matter how deep it is, when you hit that moment, these are the magic words. Jesus, I need your help. I've discovered that if I'm going to follow Jesus, this is what I've discovered. If I'm going to follow Jesus, I oftentimes need his help to follow him. And so the story ends. He never asks for help. He's never able to walk away from his money. And he walks away sad. Just the opposite of what can happen for us today. Now let's look at a couple things just to make some application. Number one, being good won't make you feel worthy. That's one thing this story is telling us. Being good will not make you feel worthy. So I don't know if you ever noticed this, but you do something really, really bad, whatever size it is, and you try to do a bunch of really, really good stuff, hoping that the good stuff will cancel out the bad stuff, and it doesn't work because they're not connected. If you burn the chicken, it doesn't matter how good the mashed potatoes are, or Mormon potatoes. Doesn't matter, because they're separate. So when you do something bad, you can do something really, really good. The Mormon potatoes could be awesome, but the chicken is still burnt. They're separate. But I try that all the time. I do something really bad. I say, I'm going to be good. I'm going to be a good husband. I'm going to be a really good husband today. I'm going to come home with flowers, and I'm not even going to think of sex for like a day. And I'm going to be a good husband. It's going to be great and everything. And I'm thinking I'm going to cancel out all the stupid stuff earlier. And it's like, no, it's still there. Because they're not connected. You can be big or be small. When I was a kid, I caught this butterfly and I made a little pet out of it. It was a big monarch butterfly, and this kid tricked me into feeding it to his hawk. So he'd give me a nickel. I was a little kid. I wanted to buy some candy or something, and so I fed the butterfly to my hawk. It went right in the cage, and the hawk killed it. I saw the whole thing. I was just a tiny little kid, And I went home and I felt so guilty. It's just a small thing. You might be sitting there thinking, just get over it, it's a butterfly. But for me, it was my little pet butterfly that I had caught. I put grass in this little thing. I made a little house for it. And it was like my butterfly. And just an instant, I got tricked and I fed it to his hawk and he killed it. And I felt so ashamed of myself. And I went home and I tried to be good for days. For days and days and days, I tried to be good. And no matter what I did, I couldn't get the picture of that hawk chomping on my butterfly. It just would not go away. Now, for you, it might be something really, really big, or it might be something very, very small. But if you're trapped, you know why Jesus looked at him in genuine love and said, you are so trapped? You're trying to erase all the bad stuff with the good stuff, and you never will. And here's the other problem. The bad stuff keeps piling up. You get a couple of it erased, you turn around, and there's three more you caused yesterday. You can't do it. What are you trying to erase with your goodness? And you've never been able to. Here's the good news. You never will. Jesus will never let you. Because if you did, you wouldn't need him. Don't make the same mistake as the guy in the story. Don't face things by yourself, and when you're not able to do it, you walk away sad. Just admit it. I need your help. Only God is great enough to make me feel good enough. Now, here's the second thing, getting towards the end here. When I follow, I feel worthy. This really would turn everything upside down for everybody. When I follow, I feel worthy. Because remember, the church of the day, the big, huge church of the day, their temple, everybody, your dad went there, your grandpa, they had all their own special books. I mean, this is a strong, strong church. They've been around for hundreds of years. They taught you that you had to be worthy. They taught you had to be worthy. And when you were worthy, you were allowed to follow. If you weren't worthy, you were disqualified from following. So everybody was taught. This was the teaching of the day. And Jesus comes and turns it all upside down. He says, it doesn't work that way at all. You have to follow God, and eventually you'll feel worthy. You don't have to be good enough to be with God. In fact, being with God makes you feel good enough. It's completely different. He's the only person that can make me feel worthy. He's the only one. I want to read something. As you know, there's lots of East Lake churches all over the West Coast, and one of our churches, someone sent this email, and it's a time in her life that, well, I'll just read it to you. She sent this email, and I got it, so I want to read it to you. It's a young lady. I wasn't even old enough for a driver's license, and my boyfriend was too busy. Wearing his Letterman's jacket, I rode on my electric blue moped to the clinic for a pregnancy test. In the waiting room, everyone looked as guilty as I felt. Even the contraception pamphlet seemed to mock me. Later, seated in the cold room, my results were read and my options were presented. As I rode home shaking, my tears drying in the wind, I remembered a debate I had with a classmate. She said it was all a choice. As an adoptee, I believe that if I had been born just a couple of years later, I probably would have been a choice instead of a life. Sweet 16 wasn't far away, yet my innocence was already gone. I kept the secret from everyone, even my best friend, especially my mom. The guilt and the shame, it spiraled into an eating disorder, and I gained 20 pounds. When I tried to have children later in life, I wasn't able to, and I figured it was God's judgment. After I started to follow Christ, I confessed my secret sin to a safe person, and the first thing he asked is, if you asked Jesus to forgive you? And I told him, no. Because I can't forgive myself, how would Jesus ever forgive me? I believed a lie that had tortured my soul for 20 years. That night, Jesus set me free from 2 decades of self-imprisonment. Listen, God's great enough to make you feel good enough. And that's the point. Now, the bottom line on your outline is only Jesus can make me feel worthy. On Tuesday, I did a funeral for Bill House. He was one of the first people to come to East Lake Church, one of the very first members. And lots of you knew who Bill was, and you probably saw Bill. Bill would come in with an oxygen tank behind him. He'd come in every week, and he was tattooed all over the place. Bill was just and pierced, and Bill was with East Lake all the time, and this is... It was just awesome to have him here, and he died last week. When I saw him in the hospital a week before, he was kind of a gruff guy. He had a past for sure, and so did I, so it didn't matter. And he said, real gruffly, he says, "Well, I guess when I die, I'll have you say a few words over me." I'm thinking, how would anybody say a few words over you, you know? And, then he did die. His son, grandson, JJ, oftentimes would be with, almost always was, Bill hardly ever missed, either did JJ. So I'm at the funeral, and man, there was a lot of people at this funeral. You know, like when you know somebody, you're not expecting them to have had the impact. There was a lot of people at this funeral, you know, and God had told me to be prepared. He told me everything to say about Bill, and I was sitting at my desk, and I was thinking about Bill, just the times I'd been with him, been in my house many, many times, and the first thing that came to my mind is Bill made it. Now, this story starts with a young man coming up, and he's saying, "Jesus, how do I make it? Because I'm not making it here, and I think there's an afterlife, and if I don't make it here, how am I going to make it there?" And so I'm talking to all of Bill's friends, and I said, "You know what's kind of hanging in the air is the question of afterlife." I said, "Maybe you believe in afterlife, maybe you don't believe in afterlife." Latest polls say 97% of Americans believe in an afterlife, so maybe in your camp, maybe you're not, maybe another camp. But if you believe in an afterlife, then the question is, well, how do I make it to the afterlife? And I told them, I said, "You're probably wondering about afterlife, and you're thinking, did Bill make it?" And it's just, you know, at a funeral, that's just sort of hanging. That's like one of the times you think about afterlife, right? Everybody's thinking about it, and they're thinking about Bill. There's this portrait of Bill up front, and man, he looked like a Hell's Angel, you know, and he's just like crazy, you know, and they're probably all thinking, "Oh, is that the bar?" You know, it's like, you know, and I said, "Hey, everybody, I want to tell you something, and I know this for sure, Bill made it, and let me tell you why. I know Bill made it to the afterlife, and I know he's with Jesus, because Bill followed Jesus in this life. So I know he's with Jesus in the next." It's all about following. That is the point.